Hello, everybody, and welcome to Connecting with the Stars. I'm here with the beautiful Lowell Johnson today. How are you doing?
It's a good day. I'm in Minnesota, so if you've been following any of the weather here, we had like 14 inches of snow in like 36 hours time. But I grew up here and I'm used to it. That's not to say that I chose this environment, but let's just say the spirit's gotten me here for a while.
Well, and you know what? Be here now. Wherever we are, we're going to be doing the same work. And we appreciate a roof over our head and food in our mouth.
Yes.
And all that stuff. We are grateful, as we all are, for everything. I'm in pouring rain. It just quit a few minutes ago when I got home. And all the homeless, I just drove by in San Francisco, because it's even in my neighborhood, it's everywhere. I'm so grateful every day for what we have, whether it's snow or rain. And I mean, we had snow here a couple of days ago. But anyway,
I saw that.
Here we are today, and I'm Mary Edwards, and here with Lowell, and I'm really happy to have you back. Last week we had sort of an introductory talk of just the two of us connecting more, since we met in Mount Shasta last summer, which was wonderful, and he had this incredible experience, and I'm going to just let him tell you all about it for the next 45 minutes, and because it's really mind-blowing. And because this is going to be a four-part series or even a six-part series, we're not going to rush through it. He's going to tell you all these experiences. We'll look at all his beautiful images next week, and we'll just continue on so he can really share the whole depth and multidimensional experience of this mind-blowing experience that he did that we really didn't get to last week. So my apologies for that, but we were just getting to know each other better and sort of laying the ground rules for the next many weeks that we have together. So anyway, I'll let you take the stage and just share wherever you want to start about this experience.
Mary, thanks. Since then, my life's taken lots of tangents and lots more rabbit holes have shown up. I guess if I was a listener and I had not had, you know, experience like I had, you know, why do you care? Why would I care being that person? Why would I care about listening to this guy's story, and what difference does it make to me? At first, long ago, right after I'd had this experience, and I'll tell you what happened with Telos. It was, you know, 2 years ago. And so enough time has passed that I've had plenty of time to assimilate what had taken place. And it wasn't like that was a one and done experience I had. Looking back at it, I understand now fully that somehow the doors to multidimensionality have opened up for me. And what I experienced in Telos was the first one I was going to have. And you never know the first time you experience anything. You have no frame of reference for it, so you don't know what it is or what it means. That goes for, you know, trying chocolate for the first time, and it goes for, you know, having experiences in realms that are around us all, depending on the level that your form vibrates. It has the capabilities of enjoying everything around it. We are all nested in this third dimensional experiment here. And so, you know, collectively, we experience all these things together. We vibrate at this level. Now, it's not a high density, as we all know. And that has been cause for lots of lessons that were learned. There were, in the scheme of things, on how human beings have to scale things and tag them so that we can achieve some level of comprehension about it. We tend to look at things as good and bad and black and white and hot and cold and on and off. And that's our nature. That's when we snapped off as a spark of source. Our job, our purpose, was to go out and learn more about itself. Everybody went off on different directions. Every one of these sparks went to go learn a different lesson. And through these incarnations we've been having to get back to source, after we've learned these lessons and reported back, we've either signed up for new ones and we've created a new reincarnation with a new soul contract and new lessons we were going to learn. At this stage in cosmic history, I can tell you that not just me, not just Mary, has had many of these previous lives. I promise you all, if you can grasp the idea, your souls have also done that. We are so tied to looking at ourselves as this 3D entity right here and this carbon body that we don't really know anything more than that. But no, I'm here to help illuminate that there's more than that. So if you want to believe the things or just the possibility that these things may be true, then you and I are going to have some fun over the next 40 minutes. Otherwise, you know, it's just another, maybe if you like sci-fi and you want to listen to it from that perspective, great. And if it doesn't resonate with you at all, I get that too, because, you know, people's attention are elsewhere. They're all sovereign beings and they're coming back to that realization because we've kind of let that go. And when we realize that we let our power go, that's exactly where we let it go. So I kind of went down this little rabbit hole here before I told you about Telos, because Telos was a demonstration that I could have, when I vibrated properly, of a multidimensional experience, and more importantly, with things that are around us. Not ETs that are off planet, not lights in the sky that we're all pointing at, trying to wonder, you know, whether that's really an ET or not. Look, guys, if that's where you're still settled, then we got some work to do. Because I'm trying to explain to you the nature of souls that have been here on the planet a lot longer than we have. They reside in that next dimension already. They've been here longer than we have. And they're waiting for the day that we can all reunite. So, yeah, the universe has interesting ways of getting your attention. My spiritual journey, although I'd had a question all my life, and when I look back at how I was raised and you know, who my parents were, because in my mind, when I chose this incarnation, as does everybody, we get to set the stage for that. When they see that you get to pick out all the things that you want in this incarnation, absolutely. And among that were my parents. I chose them. Now, I know now that I look back, and then my father was divorced and he got custody of us when he was 4. So my mother was pretty much out of the program and I didn't really get along with my dad. So I, looking back on it, knew that I wasn't going to rely on my parents for much. That what I was going to do, you know, I had what tools I needed and off I went. Now, that doesn't mean that I had a wonderful life that I navigated as a human. Hell no. It was just like everybody else's. Nasty lessons to learn and some wonderful experiences to have. That's the nature of it. But we're done learning 3D lessons. What I'd love to communicate so that people could really let it sink in is that Earth is in a cosmic cycle. She's about to rise to a new level of consciousness of her own. And with that, a higher vibration, she creates it. So I've tried to explain it that simply so that I can help you understand that in order for anything to survive or dwell in that environment, it has to match that same vibration. Now, when she climbs to her 4th level of density, which if you look around all these signs I can point to that'll demonstrate that Earth is adjusting in new ways, earthquakes, tsunamis, volcanoes that are erupting. You've all heard about upticks in all of this phenomenon going on. Here's the reason why. All of it is contingent on energy that comes at us from the sun. So if you really want to pay attention to any of it and kind of connect the dots, start there and start to get familiar with solar weather and see where that takes you. Then you can really embrace the idea of understanding more than what's on our planet. Just understand the cosmos and what you're in here in our little solar system, because we're trying to get you ready to look way beyond that. We have been limited in the scope of our conditioning for way too long. When I can help you understand that you have stored away the experience and the knowledge from every one of those experiences you'd had in the past in your little Akashic records. And every time you reincarnate, It's like the blackboard got erased. And now we have to start all over again in this incarnation. And by the end of it, hope to goodness that by the end of it, we figured out who we were and we grabbed a hold of our resources. Very few people do that. Very few people in the incarnations before us did that. We just got in this cycle of third dimensional, you know, reincarnating and learning the same lessons over again, that we were stuck in a loop. It had been suggested a long time ago that the only way that the earth was going to rise in consciousness was if the entire human collective could kumbaya at least more than 50%, and then that would be enough inertia for the earth to move toward where she wants. Well, I'm here to correct that notion, because planetary ascension and our personal ascension are two separate things. The earth is on her own cycle. Whether we get it or not, she is going. And all the signs, all of the taps on the shoulder by our higher selves and our guides have been to scramble to get our attention quickly. They're reaching from the other side now to try and get our attention so that we can master these things and raise our own vibrations before the day that this imminently is going to happen. I knew it was going to happen within my lifetime. I think I said this, I marked it on my timeline. I'm 69 years old. So the clock is ticking, guys. There's not a lot of time left before this is going to manifest, and all the signs are here to watch. So having said that, it turned out that my first multidimensional experience was going to go, and Mount Shasta was basically going to open up, invite me in to see a city of Lemurians that had been there for a long time. I went to Shasta. It was during COVID in 2020. This was in July. So if you followed the timeline back then, we all kind of went on lockdown toward the end of February. And those of us who, you know, you were told to just stay indoors, we did that. Well, the conditions I was in, I was in between homes and staying in my son's house with him back in Santa Rosa. And without really knowing, you know, what was going to happen next, I was kind of stuck there. When it came time that the rules had relaxed a bit and you didn't have to be so bound to your home, I just needed to find nature. Every time I need to connect with something outside myself and just find peace, that's where I find it. And so I thought this would be a good time to just hop in the car. The four corners of the United States, there are any number of national parks there that are gorgeous. I'd been to them before, but it's an area I would go back to in a heartbeat. So as I was trying in my mind to start to map out a grid to go there, I was beginning to hear reports that some of the national parks under the circumstances weren't even open. And so the very next thought in my head was Mount Shasta. Don't know who planted it there, but there wasn't enough time to think, even breathe between the transition of where I wasn't going to go and where apparently I was pointed to go. Now, for me, it was great because it was maybe 4 hours away. So, you know, in the morning or an afternoon to get there, I had driven by it several times, but hadn't really stopped yet. And as much as I like outside, I'm not quite sure why it kind of escaped my field. I had heard some of the magic that everyone, once you hear the term Mount Shasta, there's something associated with it that thinks that there's some kind of, I'll just call it magic for now, that people talk about. It wasn't enough to draw my attention to there at the time, but you know, as things were lining up, I had more and more interest to get there and see, you know, what to explore. All of the research I'd done had indicated that if you follow and you believe the legend, I really can't call it a legend, Saint Germain was a real person. who came out early in, was it in the 30s, that he run across Guy Ballard and had given him volumes of books to write on assistance for humanity to prepare them for what was coming next. And it got to be a popular movement. Holy cow, the Saint Germain Foundation all of a sudden had millions of people that were just, they believed in, they, you know, following that way. Over time, as Guy, you know, passed away, that kind of the impetus just kind of died away. And there's still a core of it there. But interest got lost, and, you know, then it just kind of drifted into legend. But it wasn't that. That there was a demonstration of some higher beings who made physical contact here with somebody who was vibrating at a high enough level for them to be able to experience that. It was my turn. So anyway, that reference was in regard to when I had planned to go to Shasta. I had hoped to, you know, find some of these trails and go off trail, because that's where I like to go, where no one else has been. Find a spot in the forest where you know it's quiet, and, you know, hopefully extend my arms and invite any ascended master that wishes to make contact with me, because I'm here and I'm open for it. Let's make it happen. That was my intent. So after, when I first got to Shasta, my plan was to stay for a week. And then toward the end of the week, my son and I were going to perhaps, you know, meet up in Tahoe or Reno, because he wasn't working either. There was plenty of things to do. As it got closer to the end of the first week, I called and I said, you know, there's something here and I really love it, but I'd like to stay and explore a little bit more. And he says, stay as long as you like. Well, I don't even know what made me leave when I finally did leave. But 5 weeks later, I finally went, headed back to Santa Rosa, because I had to be there for, you know, some kind of commitment. I was hiking every day, and like I was 20 years old. It took me 2 weeks to kind of realize that I should have been fatigued the way that I was hiking, given my age and my physical condition. I'm in pretty good shape for somebody my age, but even at that, I should have required a day in between some of these exhaustive hikes. And the bottom line was, I didn't. So whatever energy is there is palpable. And I've been there four times now. I can tell you that as soon as my boots hit the mountain, some way, somehow, I sense whatever that energy is now. I went there when I was sorting off the trail. I was looking for these energetic vortexes because I could sense them. I wasn't in a place when I began to actually see them yet, but that was about to come. There was some upgrades I was going to get, some activations that I was going to receive that was going to make that clearer. So I absolutely, when I started to wander on the first day I was there, I found these energetic areas where, you know, people didn't go. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where I was. I'd never been there before. And fortunately, for God knows whatever reason, I've never seen any repeaters or anything up at the top of the mountain in the areas that I like to climb. And so when you get into areas where you've got any kind of interconnection, I don't understand where it comes from, but here it is. So if you want to think that somehow the mountain was perpetuating that energy as well, well, here it is, because I got connectivity, and thank God that it did. Had I not found Cal Topo maps to begin to plot myself, see me on a GPS map so I could begin to, you know, figure out where I was to get out after day one. Yeah, I learned you just don't start to hike without a direction in mind. I also learned that it's better to hike uphill at the beginning of the climb and don't save that for the end of the day. Yeah, that was what I learned the first day. But nonetheless, I found energetic areas I was looking for. You can feel these places as you're passing through them, but it's easy to do when there's no other distractions around you, when there's no other white noise around you and there's no other people and even you know, anybody, somebody else on a trail, I was totally void of all of that. And so it was just me and whatever nature was going to serve up while it was there and whatever the universe had in mind to show me. So I'll kind of zoom to it because I'm not sure, I'm not watching the clock, so I hope you are.
I am. excuse me, I keep talking. I'm going to get a glass of water. I have a little tickle in my throat. Keep talking.
Sorry. That's all right. Go ahead. Next to the last weekend, there were a few places that I had not visited yet, but had every intention to. And so I had spent Friday around noon. I went up to this place. There's a parking lot at what's the top of Old Ski Bowl Trail. It's as high as you can drive on that side of the mountain. And there's like four picnic tables there, not really meant to picnic, but they're just places for people to wail at because you just go there to hike anyway. And when I got there, people were starting to mill around. It was noon on a Friday. And I was sitting at one of those picnic tables looking at Shasta and Shastina, which would have been off to her left, starting to map out what I was going to do for the rest of this weekend. I thought I would pick one place on Saturday and Black Butte, which is another little mountain next to Shastina, about 6,500 feet, was also on my radar because it was said that you could actually, you know, hike all the way to the top of it. Now, when I read, it wasn't recommended that you do that because it's that loose kind of scree, loose rock. Yeah, and I was hiking alone. So it wasn't, looking back at it, it wasn't a smart decision for me to do that. But I did, and I can say that I did it. It took me 6 hours, and of all the hiking I did there, it was the one that fatigued me the most, and the one I swore the next day I would lay in bed and recover from. While I was sitting there at that picnic table looking at Shasta and Shastina, well, the sun was almost directly overhead now, and you can start to see on the mountain where the shadows were starting to cast. And there were areas that looked like they could be, you know, cave openings. And so I thought, well, it's not that far from where I'm sitting to hike over there. I can see that it's, you know, off trail, but it couldn't take me any more than 30, 40 minutes to get there from here. So I thought, I'm going to do Black Butte tomorrow on Saturday. And then Sunday, I'll come back and I'll do that exploring. Well, to make a long story short, I did the Black Butte thing on Saturday. Took me, like I said, 6 hours. And by the time I got back to my room and showered and hit my rack at 6:10, that is when I finally said, I'm just laying in bed tomorrow because, man, I'm exhausted. It took me longer to come down than going up. And it was just because of the nature of that loose rock. Every time you took a step, you slipped a little bit and you just... Been there, done that, said I could. I don't recommend it for anybody else. But anyway, when Sunday morning comes, I wake up at 7 in the morning roughly every day anyway. And it's just my routine that the first thing I do is that's my first 20 minutes of meditation immediately. And then it's set for me to do the rest of my day. Well, I got up at 7 like I always do. And so I went into meditative mode. 20 minutes later, I was done. I thought I'm just going to roll over. Lay here for a while, you know, mid-morning, I'll turn on TV and I'll see what it is. Well, that was my intent. Around 9 o'clock, my ass is telling me to get out of bed, put my clothes on, and go back up to the mountain. So that's exactly what I did. A little before, I think it was a little after 11:30 when I finally got back there and started off on this adventure. Took a picture of the area I was going to go to from the car because I thought if I ever did find something, I'd want to be able to mark, you know, where I was. So if I needed to show somebody later, I can, here's where I was and here's where I went. And so that was the idea. So when I left the car, I started to hike off in that direction. There wasn't going to be anybody going in where I was. And although there was one trail that goes off along Shastina, most people that are hiking there go up Old Ski Bowl Trail because they want to gain elevation and see what it looks like in a higher level, not in the areas I was going. So there wasn't anybody else that I was going to run into that day. It did take me about 40 minutes to get to the spot. And as I was making my way up, when I left the trail, I started to find and sense those energetic areas. And when you really looked at them a little bit, you could see like there was almost this circular rock, you know, kind of enclave with a tree in the middle of it. Here's where you felt your energy. So I saw one of those as I was moving up, and it was my intention to just stay there. And I have a habit as a light worker that I understand it's my responsibility to anchor light where I go. And so when I feel energetic vortexes like that, that's where I usually saddle up. So I'll normally draw an infinity sign in the dirt with, I carry a walking stick. If it's an area that I want to just charge, then I'll find 15 rocks and put an infinity sign there, and leave my light behind. I take 4 infinity breaths, and just my intent is to, I dare you to walk through my aura here now and not sense it in the future. But that's kind of what I do. So I was in the habit of doing that when I sensed this first area. And when I was getting ready and set, I saw one that was a little bit higher up on the mountain than the one I was standing in. So I went up to stand in that area and started, you know, the same process to get ready. And then I saw one more area. And it was like there were these boulders that came out and formed this little area inside next to the mountain. And my curiosity got the better of me. So I went up to investigate. And when I did, man, here's maybe an 8-square-foot area surrounded by 3 boulders coming off the side of the mountain. And I'm like, how cool is this? So I stepped over one. The one on the side was about a little higher than my inseam, but it was narrow, so I could certainly get up over it. And so I did. So when I got there, first of all, I looked back in the direction. So way off in the distance, I can see the parking lot where everybody else is. There's nobody else where I am. And so, you know, there's no one who would know where I was. I did plant my light there. And then I sat down. So now, even if somebody went hiking by, they would have never seen me because my head's lower than the rocks. So I kind of backed up against the rock. There was just dry brush between me and whatever I was leaning up against. So I was sitting on my butt, had my legs out. I pulled some grapes and some water out of my knapsack. I was listening to music through my ear pods. And once I had finished the water and my grapes and I put that away, the music stopped. I always carry my phone in my, you know, back pocket. And so when I sat up to reach for it and pull it out, when I looked at it, the power was off. Now, this made no sense to me because it was just fully charged when I left the car not that long ago. And it had a Mophie battery charger pack around it as well. So this wasn't going to run out of power. Well, as I was kind of taking all this in, I could see what felt like to me like a shadow that was kind of moving along, almost like the sun was moving so quickly it would cast a shadow that you could see. One that was coming like where I was sitting, and then one that almost felt like a canopy that was coming, you know, from above me. And while that sensation kind of sunk in, I felt a breeze from behind me. And when I turned around to look, where I had been leaning up against the rock, there was now a hole large enough for if I stood up to stand up and it would still be higher than I was. So I stood up to see what was behind me. And there was a little rise from where I was standing that went up. And then it appeared as though this was, I would later understand, this is a lavatube. Which makes perfect sense. There's a volcanic area. There's lots of lavatubes around here. But as my eyes were beginning to adjust to whatever was in the dark here, it looked like there was a form. And the more I looked at it, the more it looked like there was a person down there. And if I had to guess, it was, you know, an adult-sized man. Well, I can't say male. An adult-sized person I thought was about my size down there. So when that wherewithal, when I finally figured out there actually was somebody down there, that's when I heard someone say, "Would you like to see Telos?" My heart raced a little bit, and I said, "Yeah, I'm all about seeing things that I have not yet seen. I've left fear in, you know, my back rearview mirror a long time ago, because I'm to the stage in life, I know what's next. I know what's wonderful next." So really, there are days in this ascension process that I'm like, just take me. If I'm capable of ascending, I'm good to go. Take me now. And it's, not really the deal you made, Lowell. You asked us to restore some of these abilities that you had so you could help others. Well, here you are, and here they are. So the time is now. Your story is going to help, but it's not so much that many people have resonated with Lemurians. I've seen and experienced firsthand since this word got out. Just as many with Telos for other reasons. Inner Earth, there's a whole other body of, you know, interest in all of that. And so I've been getting a great deal of attention. Let's go back to the actual visit. As I started to walk down this incline, and I got closer, I could tell right away that this being was not my size. He was at least a head taller than I was, and probably more than that. So maybe 8 feet tall is what I would say. This being had a white, like a tunic or robe on, and he had these kind of, they looked like ribbons to me, and they were different colors. He looked very Scandinavian to me, and when he spoke, it sounded like almost kind of British Australian, that kind of twang to it. He said, "You can call me Alex." I said, "Well, that'll be easy to remember. That's my son's name." He said, "Yeah, we know about your son. Follow me." And we made our way down an incline to an area where I could see where we were going. There was light that came from that area. And as we got closer, I looked behind me to see, you know, where I'd come from. There was no light at all from behind me. It'll take me months to figure out that I slipped through a portal. And that's why when I went back looking through these 3D, you know, markers, yeah, you're no longer in that realm, but you're very much in a physical realm. Fourth and fifth dimensional experiences are physical, not just for us, but for the things that we're about to experience. We just have command of higher powers and the ability to manifest, you know, things that we couldn't do now.
And just for you to know, we have a few more, like 3 more minutes. This is like, oh, I can't wait for next time.
Well, you know what? Then I'll take you here. I'm going to explain the staging area. I'm going to get you inside, and that'll be a good place to stop. As we approach this light area down at the bottom of this ramp, it opened up to, I call it a staging area. It was fairly large, pretty well lit, and across from where we came in, there were 5 more of these tubes that went off in directions that way. But as I stopped and looked immediately to my left when I came in, there was like this, there was a platform that was there. I want to say the dimensions are about 6 by 6, and it looked like there were, I call them bucket seats for lack of a better phrase than that. No console, just a place for you to sit. There was another one a little further off to the left, and off to the right, there was another one over there. Well, as I was taking this in, Alex gets over into the seat on the left-hand side. You know, in my world, that would be the driver's seat, and indicated for me to sit next to him. And as soon as my butt hit that seat, this thing levitated and off we went. So we headed toward the middle of those 5 tubes opposite from us. And the most notable part about it is that the sensation that you get from moving, you know, just wind going by you. Yeah, there wasn't any of that. You knew that you were moving, though. And once we reached the other end of this tube, I could start to begin to see light coming in from the opposite end. That's when you began to realize that there were crystals embedded into this tube. And every moment you move forward, the light refraction would change a little bit and the colors would vary. And oh my God, it was like a living kaleidoscope. And I wanted more of it. Well, when it ended, it was because we'd reached the other end of the tunnel. And now we're in the first level of the city of Telos. And he takes this device and we levitate to a level. So you've seen these cityscape pictures and photographs. This is what I'm seeing. Here's my first shot at Telos. It's circular in orientation. The buildings are all crystalline in form, except for there's a white pyramid in the midst of the city. I look up to see if I can figure out, you know, where the top of this is, because in my little brain, I'm underground in a cave. I can't see whatever the top of this is supposed to be. And yet, it's lit like sunlight. There's no sunlight, no beams coming in. So how does all that happen? So we'll stop here.
Oh my God.
Now we're in the first level.
My heart is pounding. Okay.
And we'll pick up there.
Oh my God. Well, this is such an adventure. Indiana Jones goes to Delos. Well, this is just unbelievable. Well, thank you so much. And I can't wait for next time, Lowell. It's always a pleasure, and I can't wait to dive into the next section of your story, Telos.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time then. Thank you.
Take care. All right.
Thank you. Have a good day, everybody. Mm-hmm.